Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 24th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Our starting line for Wednesday's show is African athletics. Ugandan star Joshua Cheptegei says his training is going well as he bids for his first Olympic gold medal at this year's Tokyo Games. The 24-year-old Cheptegei is the reigning world champion at 10,000 meters. Last year, on the track, Joshua set new world records at both 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters. And on the roads, Cheptegei set another world record of 12 minutes and 51 seconds in a 5-kilometer race in Monaco. Joshua began his 2021 season on February 14th at that same Monaco road race. While Cheptegei finished 23 seconds slower than last year, he did defend his Monaco title and is looking forward to the Tokyo Olympics. Magume Davis Rakawinge tells us more from Kampala, Uganda.
Fresh from defending the Monaco 5 kilometers, Joshua Cheptegei says he's in good shape for upcoming international engagements, including the Summer Olympics.
I started my preparations by winning a race in Monaco where I broke last year the world record. So I suppose that this year should be really a good year because of the win. And I also look forward to a great year. And I know that it's still 4 to 5 months away from now. And I know that with my team, with my coaches, they have the right program and we'll discuss and what best suits me to be at the limelight and to be on top shape and best prepared for the Olympic Games come July, end of July and August.
Cheptegei's stardom is being rewarded locally and internationally. He was recently made a tourism ambassador by the Uganda Tourism Board, and the local telecom company MTN is sponsoring his foundation. Wim Van Helput, the head of MTN, says it is a great thing to be associated with the world's best.
His performance is extraordinary. And I think that we still have a bit of work to make Ugandans understand what kind of unique talent Joshua is, also a great personality. And of course, we're looking forward to July, August 2021, the Tokyo Olympics, where we hope that we are sure that he's going to, you know, again, amaze us and bring home some medals.
Part of this sponsorship will be to fund local talent to train in Kapchorwa, the locality where Cheptegei hails from. Cheptegei says such motivates him to even do better.
As an individual and as a foundation, I'm so privileged and I'm so honored that I have now a helping hand from people who are going to actually support my vision. So this comes at a time that I'm actually preparing for the Olympic Games, and it's a great motivation towards achieving success at the Olympic Games in Tokyo, Japan.
Namai Mawerele, the spokesperson for Uganda Athletics Federation, says the athletics fraternity in Uganda is elated by Cheptegei's performance.
It is a recognition that Uganda is among the top 5 countries in the world of distance running. Twice world over now, know Uganda through athletics that has become a vehicle for marketing the country. Cheptegei has become now an ambassador. He's an international icon, has revolutionized athletics in Uganda and motivated many upcoming youths yearning to emulate him.
Cheptegei has consistently performed brilliantly after winning 2 gold medals in the 5,000 and 10,000 categories in the 2018 Australia Commonwealth Games and went on to win and break world records in years after. He simply seems unstoppable. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinje in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magume. From Uganda, let's go to neighboring South Sudan, where football fans and sports officials are welcoming the kickoff of the country's first ever women's national league. South Sudan's Minister for Culture, Youth and Sports says the Women's Football League will promote peaceful coexistence among various communities across the country. David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Hundreds of men, women and children watched as the Awil women and the Juba superstars squared off in the first match of the South Sudan Women's Football League on Saturday at Bullock Playground in Juba. The superstars beat the Awil women by 2-0, with Susie Michael scoring the first goal of the league before Emanuela Satiro doubled for the hosts in the 70th minute of the second half. In the second round of games on Sunday, Bentiu United won 1-0 against Kwajok women. Yei Joint Stars won 3-0 against the Yambio women in Yambio, and the hosts Torit women thrashed the Wa women 8-0. Torit tops the table on goal difference after the first round. Yei is in second place and the Wa women are at the bottom of the table. Francis Amin, president of the South Sudan Football Association, says what had been a long uphill battle has finally turned out to be a dream come true.
Today is a historic day in South Sudan. We have registered it for the first ever South Sudan League, and which is recognized in the system by the FIFA. We have made it today, and congratulations to the whole team. We have started the beginning with the training of the coaches, administration, and now we have kicked off the league. The next, we are going to receive the coach for the national team.
Uganda national Jean Sinende is a Confederation of African Football, or CAF, consultant on women's football, who has been hired by the South Sudan Football Association to provide technical guidance. She says launching the league gives hope to many young women across South Sudan and for women's football in the region.
Because if we don't start, then we'll never see where we can improve. So we've started the matches. Now, every match, hopefully, we can work with the coaches who we trained in January so that we can help them on how to improve with also their game plan, technically, tactically, mentoring them so that they can transfer that onto the girls that they are training. So in January, we trained over 90 coaches in our strategy.
With those 90 coaches, Sinende says the strategy is to have them teach players across the country to develop the Women's League. On February 10th, the SSFA appointed South African national Shelene Boisen as South Sudan's first female head coach of the Bright Starlets, the senior women's national football team. South Sudan's men's team is the Bright Stars. Sinende says the league will be key for FIFA's licensed coach to watch, identify talented players, and determine where the South Sudan's women's team can improve. Boisen, who holds a CAF A license, recently served as performance analyst for South Africa's team at the 2020 COSAFA Women's Championship. She is expected to arrive in Juba later this week to head up the Bright Starlets. Sinende says the league is creating a platform for many young girls in South Sudan to exercise their talent. She says she would like to see South Sudanese women's teams become the best in East Africa. Before she was a football consultant, Sinende played in England in the FA Women's National League for Queen's Park Rangers and Crystal Palace. She also played for the Charlton Athletic Women's Club and the London Phoenix Ladies FC. She says all South Sudanese, including parents, guardians, and men, should support girls and give them the opportunity to showcase their talent instead of marrying them off at a young age.
You could see from the talent and the fans who came here today, even when they were not allowed to, that the desire is there to support women's football. Now we hope we can continue changing the mindsets and the perceptions of everybody, that women can do much more than just stay at home, get pregnant, get married off. I think we need to change that perceptions, because from my own story, it shows that you can be a player, you can be an administrator. There is so much more than just the game.
South Sudan's culture, youth and sports minister, Dr. Albino Ball, says the Women's League is important because it encourages South Sudanese from various communities to interact with each other.
Peace, cannot be achieved if we are not socializing among ourselves. Socialization among our tribes through a peaceful coexistence is what will bring peace. And sport is one of the social activities that can bring peace to the whole nation in a very simple way. So I want to thank the FIFA and the CAF and the Football Association of South Sudan and the leadership of Francis Amin for coming up with this great event.
The league has 8 football clubs, the Juba Superstars, the Ye Joint Stars, the Yambia Women FC, the Awil Women, Kwajok Women, the Wa Women, the Torit Women, and Bentiu United. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga.
Thank you, David, for that report from Juba.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Egyptian side, Al Ahly, is earning accolades in Africa and in Europe for its third-place performance at the recent FIFA Club World Cup football tournament in Qatar. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the CEO of Result Sports, the Germany-based analyst Mario Leo.
Yeah, Al Ahly did a great club world championship tournament, coming up third. So I was very proud and very happy to see the performance of Al Ahly. Obviously, with the South African coach, it's a great performance. The team has stabilized. The team is very competitive, and the team knows that it plays for the pride of Africa. I think that's very important. Yeah, while Palmeiras was disappointed by not reaching the final of the tournament, and Palmeiras is the top team in South America, obviously they were not as focused in the match coming third. But Al Ahly played for the entire continent, performed very well, was across the 90 minutes the better performing team, and finally secured third place through penalty shoots. So yeah, I was very pleased on Al Ahly, and I think that the team has done the entire continent very, very proud.
Do you think or believe that other clubs in Africa, also rated by your firm, will one day make a great mark like Al Ahly?
Yeah, I think the African Champions League competition, year after year, is improving. The competitiveness is growing. We see new teams professionalize in the Eastern African region. Tanzanian teams like Simba doing very well. Just beat Al Ahly in the group stages. So I think the competitiveness of the Champions League in Africa is performing or is growing, and therefore, yeah, I can see Moroccan teams like Wydad Casablanca, Raja Club in Algeria, very much competing with Zamalek and Al Ahly. So the North African giants, as I call them, on the social media side, but also on the sporting side, yeah, they capture a huge audience, a huge fan base behind them. And the structures and obviously the sporting performances are growing all of the time. So I'm very pleased to see that. And I think, yes, I think that African teams will constantly or are able constantly to reach the semifinals and of the Club World Championship, and therefore striving for more glory for the African continent.
What's your assessment of some African players in the ongoing German Bundesliga? Are there some exceptions who have done well?
This year, really one player stands out with African heritage in the Bundesliga, and it's his name is Silas Wamangituka from the Democratic Republic of Congo. He's sheer force, superb speed, very physical, lots of strength, just turned 21, so having a great season, lots of assists, plenty of goals. He's been possibly the strongest player with African heritage. But also I see Samaseko, the sort of the Mali duo, Samaseko for Hoffenheim and Haidara for RB Leipzig, playing very regularly in the first team, sort of have stabilized after signing from Red Bull Salzburg, stabilized in the Bundesliga. And those three are probably the standout players at the moment. But as I mentioned, yeah, Silas Wamangituka is the star possibly at the moment at VfB Stuttgart, and therefore stands out.
That's Mario Leo, the CEO of Results Sports. And Mario spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Germany.
My name is Mario Leo. I'm the founder and chief executive of Results Sports. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you for having me on the show.
Golf legend Tiger Woods was hospitalized with serious injuries Tuesday after a single car crash near Los Angeles, California. The AP's Mike Gracia reports.
15-time major golf champion Tiger Woods was in a one-car crash in suburban Los Angeles Tuesday, and both of his legs were seriously injured. Los Angeles County Fire Chief Daryl Osby.
He was taken from the vehicle with a collar and backboard for spinal precautions.
Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says the SUV Woods was driving crossed the road and rolled over.
The vehicle traveled several hundred feet from the center divider at the intersection and rested on the west side of the road in the brush.
Woods had been tournament host for the Genesis Invitational over the weekend. He stayed in Southern California to do filming with Discovery-owned Golf TV. I'm Mike Gracia.
In a golf career filled with remarkable comebacks, this may be Tiger Woods' toughest recovery of all. The AP's Julie Walker reports.
A statement on Woods' Twitter account says the golfer was awake, responsive, and recovering after his SUV hit a sign and toppled down an embankment near L.A. The deputy who found him says he's lucky to be alive, and police say there's no evidence he was impaired. Woods broke his leg in several places and injured his foot and ankle. Thoughts and prayers have come from everywhere. Jack Nicklaus, Michael Jordan, Mike Tyson, and former presidents Barack Obama and Donald Trump. Woods played golf with both of them, and Trump awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom after his great triumph, winning the Masters after four back surgeries. I'm Julie Walker.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Turning to tennis, with the success of the recent Australian Open, tournament director Craig Tiley describes the event as a blueprint for securing the safety of participants during the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Craig Tiley and his Tennis Australia team achieved what many thought would be nearly impossible to pull off, staging the Australian Open during a global pandemic. And after a year that didn't see much tennis played at all, the South African director reflected on the success of the tournament in the midst of very challenging circumstances.
We can look back now a day later and reflect on it being a highly successful event, and the circumstances and all the variables that were thrown at us, an avalanche of variables over the period of time, which were by the team handled very admirably. Everyone that's had anything to do with this event has been part of the success of it. And I did say that I believe that in the coming month there'll be the realization, not only from the players but from the staff and others, on the extent of the success of being able to pull off what we just did as a team, and the impact that we could have, one, on the local economy, two, on everyone's psyche, but most importantly on global sport and entertainment as well.
The Australian Open took place in Melbourne, the biggest city in Victoria State, where strictly enforced lockdown strategy has nearly eradicated community transmission of the coronavirus in the region. Tiley's biggest challenge was to convince the local government to allow tennis athletes in while keeping the virus out. So in mid-January, more than 1,000 players and support staff from around the globe flew into Australia and were quarantined for 14 days. Most of the athletes were allowed to train for 5 hours a day. However, 72 players were forced into total lockdown after passengers on their flights tested positive for COVID-19. And because of the strict lockdown measures, the Australian Open survived new infections and avoided a complete derailment after a hotel worker tested positive just days before the tournament was set to begin. Add to that a crowd size with enough numbers to create an energetic atmosphere. And Craig Tiley says the Australian Open can be seen as a blueprint for major sporting events to follow, including the upcoming Olympic Games.
Everyone has a different way of approaching it. If you want to ensure that every athlete is not either has the virus or is not incubating the virus, you need to have a period of time before where you test consistently and they are isolated for enough period of time where they don't go beyond the incubation period of 10 to 14 days. When you do that, and then you stick the athletes out to compete, everyone will have the opportunity to compete and they won't be taken out because they either a close contact or they contract the virus. So I think that's essential to protect the athletes' health and safety. And that's why in the Olympic Games case, we've been challenging the Olympic Games to ensure that for our athletes, we're concerned about our athletes, our tennis players as well, as that are they going to be put in an environment where they can be ensured that they can play? Now they can get on the court. They're not going to be a close contact or not going to be able to not contract the virus. So I think that's really important. I think it's a blueprint that works. It requires more resources and more time. But if you want to do it right, that's a commitment you have to make. And that's one that we made.
Tiley admits pulling off this year's tournament put a big hole in Tennis Australia's finances. Cash reserves of nearly $63 million will be completely wiped out. And Tiley says the governing body has needed to take out a loan to get them through to next year.
It'll be a significant financial strain on the organization. But the positive about it is it's put us in a position of momentum where we've got other assets which we've invested in the past around the world, but we'll be in a healthy position. Everyone's able to keep their jobs, and through how we've managed our finances through the pandemic, that's one of the things we've been incredibly proud of, and we'll get through the next cycle as well. Obviously, we're planning on other events and more events leading in, as well as our major source of revenue, but we're in a good place, but we've had to spend all the spare money we had to be in this place.
Nonetheless, Tiley is already looking ahead to 2022. Earlier this month, he expressed hope that under his leadership, the Australian Open will return to its usual two-week slot next January. But Tiley said that would mean the quarantine process will need to start in December.
What we are going to plan for is quarantine program, a different date, because currently we've been pushed a month forward as an event, so we want to come to a month back in January. So get back to our original dates, quarantine in December, more crowds, but in a much more digitally friendly and safe way, or new way, I should say. It's safe currently now, but they'll continue with those protocols. I don't see physical distancing and the wearing of masks and the quarantine going anytime soon.
But for now, the celebrations continue for Novak Djokovic of Serbia and Naomi Osaka of Japan, winners of the men's and women's singles titles at this year's Australian Open. It was an 18th major title for Djokovic and his record 9th Australian trophy. Meanwhile, Osaka became Australian Open champion for a second time and clinched her 4th Grand Slam title. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Andre DeGrasse, 3-time Olympic sprint medalist, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
In National Basketball Association action Tuesday night, the Dallas Mavericks edged the visiting Boston Celtics by 3 points, thanks to a last-second shot from young Slovenian star Luka Doncic. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
Luka Doncic capped his 31-point game by draining a tie-breaking three-pointer with 0.1 seconds remaining, giving the Mavericks a 110-107 win over the Celtics.
It's just something I've been doing. I try to do, sometimes two people go on me, I have to pass it. But, you know, sometimes you're going to miss it, like the last game against Portland. And, you know, sometimes you're going to make it.
Jaylen Brown had 29 points for Boston, including a go-ahead jumper after the Celts trailed by 11 with 3 minutes to play. The Mavs won for the seventh time in 9 games to get back to 500 for the first time in almost a month. The Celtics are under 500 for the first time since a 1-2 start. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Elsewhere around the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Toronto Raptors 109-102 in a game played in Tampa, Florida. The AP's John Lethierby reports.
Tobias Harris and Furkan Korkmaz led the way for the 76ers offensively in a 109-102 triumph over Toronto at Amalie Arena. Harris went 8 of 12 from the field as the team's high scorer. He had 23 points. Korkmaz got hot early with 15 of his 19 points coming courtesy of the three ball.
I needed one of these games, last 4 or 5 games. I was struggling. We can definitely say that. But that today, he trusted me. He gave me that confidence. He started me the game. And then I think I did a good job.
Norman Powell led Toronto in scoring, finishing with a game-high 24 points. Pascal Siakam added 22 in the loss. Before the game, the Sixers' Ben Simmons was named as a reserve to the Eastern Conference All-Star team. I'm John Lethierby.
Thanks, John. John mentioned that All-Star selection for Philadelphia's Ben Simmons. Ben's teammate, Cameroonian star Joel Embiid, has been named as a starter for the NBA All-Star Game, which will be played March 7th in Atlanta, Georgia. The other Eastern Conference All-Stars who will start the game are Bradley Beal of the Washington Wizards, Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets, Irving's Brooklyn teammate Kevin Durant, and Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Now let's take a look at the starters for the Western Conference All-Stars. We have LeBron James of the defending NBA champion Los Angeles Lakers, Kawhi Leonard of the Los Angeles Clippers, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. As Dave Ferry reported earlier, Luka made that big shot on Tuesday night against the Celtics. And the two other Western Conference starters are Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors and Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets beat the Portland Trail Blazers Tuesday night, as we hear now from the AP's Bruce Morton in Denver, Colorado.
Jamal Murray celebrated his birthday with 19 fourth-quarter points as Denver fought off the Trailblazers 111-106. Murray finished with 24 points on his 24th birthday after waiting until the fourth quarter to light up the scoreboard.
I'm not really looking for the stats. I'm always going to hit the open men. I'm not going to really force just to try to get my points up. So it was just time and place. Like I said, I just got to pick my spots.
While Murray had a big night, Denver was led by a game-high 41 points from Nikola Jokic. The game was tied midway through the fourth quarter when the Nuggets came through with an 11-2 spurt, good for a 101-92 advantage with 2:03 to go. Portland has lost 3 in a row. Bruce Morton, Denver.
Thanks, Bruce. And let's send some belated happy birthday wishes to Denver's point guard, Jamal Murray. And here are a few fun facts about Murray. He was born in Kitchener, Ontario, and he represents Canada in international competition. And Jamal definitely has an international pedigree. His mother, Sylvia, is from Syria, and his father, Roger, was born in Jamaica and moved to Canada at the age of 9. And Jamal Murray's dad also has a sporty background. As a boy, he competed against none other than future world heavyweight boxing champion Lennox Lewis. And speaking of boxing, the now retired Floyd Mayweather is celebrating his 44th birthday on this Wednesday. Mayweather was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he now lives in Las Vegas, Nevada, the venue for many of his fights. Mayweather's last official fight was in 2017 in Las Vegas, where he stopped Conor McGregor in the 10th round to improve his record to a perfect 50-0. Mayweather was scheduled to fight YouTube personality Logan Paul in an exhibition bout on February 20th, but it's been postponed, so we'll wait and see if it comes off. In the meantime, happy 44th birthday, Floyd Mayweather. And that wraps up the February 24th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.